This is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So another week, another podcast.
Yeah, another one. They keep coming around, don't they?
So have you seen any films this week, Ian?
I have.
You have?
I have. Yes. Finally. I've seen
the
film.
I'm stood aghast. I'm gaping.
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema.
No.
Yes, that's right. On the big screen.
Ooh.
Yeah, I saw A Place Beyond Two Pines. A Place Beyond the Pines. I don't know. I keep getting confused with that. It's the most unmemorable name ever. A Place Beyond the Pines? I'm sure it's something to do with Two Pines?
I don't know. You saw it.
The Pines? Or is it Two Pines? Am I thinking Two Pines because in Back to the Future it's the Lone Pine Mall and the Two Pine Mall?
Yes, let's just go with that.
Okay,
yeah.
A Place Beyond the Pines.
Was it any good?
No.
Oh.
No, it really wasn't. It's a funny film because it's been getting amazing reviews.
This is the one that's got Ryan Gosling in it.
Yeah, and the other fella, the bloke from Hangover.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. I think so. And it's just, it's bizarre the notices it's getting. It's getting like 4 or 5 star reviews across the board.
Right.
And it's mediocre at best.
Wow.
I would say like 2.5 stars, tops.
Do you know, this reminds me of last week. We did Once last week.
Yes, we did.
Where you seem to be the only two people in the world who don't like Once.
No, but the people I saw it with were exactly the same. And they're all as shocked and bewildered as I was that the fact it's getting such good reviews.
How weird.
I mean, like, to be honest, I was out of the four of us though who saw it, I was the one who was like, well, it had its problems, it was okay. They were like, that was awful.
Right.
And... yeah, we definitely are in a minority.
It's funny though, isn't it? It's weird.
It has an unusual structure. So perhaps because of that reason, you know, reviewers, they see so many films.
Yeah.
Anything that's a little bit unusual,
yeah. They
tend to really latch onto. So it does have a slightly unusual structure in the way it tells its story.
Mm.
But my God. I mean, even counting for the gorgeous Ryan Gosling, even accounting for its unusual structure... 3 stars, even if you're being really generous, 3 stars tops.
Wow.
It's just.
I can see this
you
is
keep
really
thinking
effective.
The film's ending, and then it doesn't. It's, it's terrible.
Terrible.
And it has, like, towards the end, these two terrible teenage characters. Oh, unbelievable.
You know, this week and last week, it seems like we're positioning ourselves as the podcast that hates everything you like. If you like something, we'll guarantee
only if
to
you
hate
like
it.
Wonks and A Place Beyond the Pines or Beyond Two Pines or Two Pines Beyond the Place or whatever it was called. Oh, yes.
Anyway. Let's rinse out our mouths and move on to the next film.
Okay. I'll skip the rinsing if it's all right. Yes, this week's film. Thankfully, it's a film I think we're both going to enjoy. It is Network.
Network, yes. 1976. What's the pitch for this one?
I would say, well, at its time, it was considered a mad satire of the media.
Mm.
Now it's just like a typical day at Channel 5.
It's a documentary.
Yeah. Now no one will bat an eyelid at the things it says is so crazy and ridiculous. It's all about a guy... played by Peter Finch, what's his name? Howard Beale. Who's
yeah.
a news anchor who's about to retire, or has been told, forced into retirement, and he has a breakdown on air and says he's going to kill himself. And of course, that garners ratings, and then the network who own him start to use him and start to package him in a way to get those ratings to keep on going up.
Yeah, and he kind of has this continued breakdown, and he's basically, we think he may be having an embolism or something. But they still kind of put him on air and try and ruthlessly abuse him.
It's a satire of television's need to hold up people. And yeah, the chase for ratings, the fact that it doesn't actually care about who it uses or hurts as long as people are watching.
It's an odd film though, isn't it? I didn't really realise it was meant to be a comedy or satire until about halfway through.
No, it starts quite serious and gradually... kind of becomes more ridiculous as the film goes on.
Yeah.
It starts very... you know, it everything that happens to begin with is relatively realistic.
Mm.
And as the film goes on, it gets more and more ridiculous. And for me, anyway, starts to become slightly less believable.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first bit, where it's kind of mostly like boardroom machinations, you know, this behind-the-scenes power struggle for control of the actual network itself.
Yeah, and Howard Beale sale is just being used as a tool by both sides.
But it's, you know, really tightly scripted, and it's a really interesting plot. It really kept me interested. And then you kind of get about halfway through, and it just kind of almost becomes a bit of a farce, but then pulls it back at the end. And
yeah.
It's quite strange. Quite an odd film.
Yeah, I mean, this is from neither of us have actually seen, but I'd heard and read lots about it, so I kind of wanted to do it for the podcast.
It's weird. I'd never heard of it, but recently I seem to be hearing about it all the time. You know, once you hear about something, then you see it everywhere.
Yeah, isn't that the way? Yeah, weren't you reading something about the new Alan Partridge film?
Yeah, apparently the new Alan Partridge film is influenced by this and Dog Day Afternoon. Apparently, both Sidney Lumet films.
That'll be very interesting to see when it comes up. Yeah, no, I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I completely agree with you. Its tone shifts throughout the film, but I think it more or less gets away with it.
Mm.
There are a couple of moments where it kind of, for me, almost veered off, and it almost completely sort of not ruined, but. Lost its way, but it, as you say, I think it always managed to get itself back on track and tell a coherent story.
Yeah, definitely. And some phenomenal performances in it as well. Some, you know, top-notch acting.
Yeah, you've got a. I mean, it's a fantastic cast. You've got Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
Robert Duvall. Peter Finch, who plays Howard Beale, the kind of the man who has the breakdown, and Wong Wong Film's favourite.
William Holden.
William Holden.
We recently covered Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like it's being in a time machine. This. Yeah, you so kind of strange. Leap from him being a young man in his early 30s to suddenly here we are seeing him in his sort of late 60s.
Yeah.
With a very lined face. But, yeah, fantastic performances. And as we were saying, a very prescient film.
Yes.
In this depiction of the excesses of media.
Definitely.
I mean, what... When watching it now, you kind of think, well, that's not too out of... Yeah, that's kind of average. fair.
Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are.
Let's do the trivia quiz.
Okay. Trivia quiz!
Okay, question one. In 1978, Sidney Lumet, the director of Network, went on to direct a version of The Wizard of Oz starring an all-African-American cast.
Oh.
What was it called?
Oh, I know this. It's got Diana Ross in it, I think.
Yes. And Michael Jackson.
Is it The Wiz?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Was it starring Richard Pryor as The Wizard of Oz?
I've never seen it, but man, it's an intriguing film.
I know, I really want to see it.
I think we should do the triple bill. I think we should do The Wiz, Wizard of Oz 2, Return to Oz.
Return to Oz.
And Zardoz. The three Oz films.
The three Oz films. Perfect. Well, I've never seen Wizard of Oz. We've got to do.
You've never seen The Wizard of Oz? Right. Oh, we definitely have to do Wizard of Oz.
We'll get that on the list.
Wow, good grief. Yeah, definitely. And then we'll do The Wiz.
Okay, question two. What is the connection between this film and Citizen Kane? This is quite a hard one. I'd be surprised if you got it, to be honest.
What is the connection between this film and Citizen Kane?
It's a very distant link.
Oh, okay. Well, if I'm right, this is a real distant link. Yeah. Okay. Charles Foster Kane is based on William Hurst.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, there is a character whose name I can't quite remember, but she's the victim of a political kidnap.
Yeah, I can't believe
And she is an analogy. Yeah. She's supposed to be a version. It's based on Patty Hearst, who was kidnapped in the 70s by some political group. Yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Wow. I can't believe you got that. I was like, you'll never get that one. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mary Ann Gifford in this film is based on Patty Hearst, who was actually kidnapped by the, I think, Silhousey Liberation Army.
Oh, yeah, no, Symbiosi. Yeah.
She was one of the kind of only recorded sufferers of Stockholm Syndrome. She kind of ended up siding with her attackers.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And committing robberies on their behalf.
And she was the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst, who was... allegedly portrayed in Citizen Kane.
Oh.
Well done, Ian. Well done. Okay, and last question. What's the name of the fictional network in the film?
UBS.
Yes, that's right. 3 out of 3. Yeah. Well done.
Right, okay, my questions now. Question one. What was unique about Peter Finch's Oscar for Best Actor until 2009?
Oh, I know this. It was awarded posthumously. He died of a heart attack before the Oscar ceremony.
Yeah, that's right. And why did it stop being unique in 2009?
Because Heath Ledger was awarded one as well.
That's right, yes. And that's a real shame, isn't it, that Peter Finch died before he got the Oscar? Because it is an incredible performance. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a bit. Okay, question two. We already mentioned that there's a radical left-wing group depicted in the film. Can you tell me the name of that radical left-wing group?
Oh, it's the Ecumenical Liberation Army.
Ah, well done, yes. a parody, as you said earlier, of the Symbionese Liberation Army. That's Patty Hearst. Okay, and final question. What won Best Picture Oscar in that year? What beat it?
Think it was Rocky?
It was Rocky, yes. Look at that, 6 out of 6.
Nice. Well, that hasn't happened in a long time.
Obviously, we're actually interested in this film, so remember the facts. Yes, apparently the writer, Paddy Chayefsky, was very angry that Rocky won that year. Yeah.
That's a good film. It's a good film. Some might say Rocky is a little bit better than Network. I don't know.
It's certainly more of an Oscar film.
Yeah.
Yeah, a kind of redemption story. Network's a little bit too radical.
Yeah.
A little bit too controversial.
But yeah, we mentioned the performances in the trivia quiz.
Mm.
Peter Finch, fantastic as Howard Beale.
Yeah. It really is, isn't it? He brings a wild-eyed craziness to it.
I mean, some of those speeches are just phenomenal.
Really powerful as well.
I'm mad as hell, and I ain't going to stand for it.
Yeah, well, no, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, that's
which
it.
Which he asks everyone to open their window and just shout out.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
And I love that he sort of says, I don't know how to solve the oil crisis. I don't know how to solve the crime. I don't know how to solve, but we've got to get angry.
Yeah. It just kind of builds and builds, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And his performance throughout the film just builds and builds. You know, the speeches get crazier and crazier, you know, as they go along. And just amazing performance. I don't know how he did it. No wonder he had a heart attack.
No, yeah, well, quite. In fact, I think in the actual speech, the I'm as mad as hell speech, that's actually filmed in two parts. They did one take and he collapsed halfway through.
Really?
And then they had to do another take. And it's actually, they took the first half is taken from the first take and the second half is taken from the second take.
Mm.
But they didn't realise quite how bad his heart was at the time.
Right.
So he really did push himself, because it really is a eyes bulging,
crazy
performance. But you know, earlier in the film, you ever see other bits where he's slightly more subdued. So he's not hamming it up.
Mm.
It's just depicting a breakdown, which is what he's having. Yeah.
He's hearing voices.
And Robert Duvall's very good as a kind of hissable villain.
Oh, God, yeah, he's brilliant. I really, really... Robert Duvall is perhaps an underappreciated actor nowadays. I think, you know, he's...
Mm.
You don't hear much talk about him nowadays, but, I mean, he's been in some fantastic films. Yeah, and he's just...
in The Godfather, wasn't he?
The Godfather. He was, recently Apocalypse Now we did.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Amazing performance.
Yeah, he crops up in a couple of the films we've covered, actually, hasn't he? And nice to see William Holden all these years later, after stepping in our time machine and shooting forward 40 years.
If anything, he's better in this film than he is in Sunset Boulevard, I think.
Yeah, he has he's got a craggy face, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So many lines.
You could hide bits of Lego in that face.
I almost didn't recognise him.
Yeah.
He really does look very different. Mm-hmm. It's only around the eyes you sort of can see it. But yeah, he's great as a kind of slightly lost head of news. Sort of Howard's friend and boss. Yeah,
still has his morals, but
gradually kind of loses them.
And being worn down in the face of the basically heartless, evil tyrants that run the station.
Yeah. And then you've got Faye Dunaway as a kind of hard-nosed modern woman. It does almost perhaps make the suggestion that because that she's a woman and she's have this quite powerful job in the network, she's had to lose all kind of sense of humanity and connection to people.
Yeah, that's it. It's like it's saying you can't be a kind of effective boss unless you're basically just a kind of robot woman.
Yeah, like an evil. Yeah. Although I suppose Robert Duvall plays an evil guy, but yeah, it's She's humanised slightly in her relationship with William Holden's character, Schumacher.
Yeah, definitely. And it's still a great performance. Really good.
And I'll tell you what, very, very good little performance was by Beatrice Straight.
Yeah, so she's Max's wife, isn't she? William Holden's wife.
Wife, yeah. And they have a very tense scene where he sort of admits to having an affair to her. And it's done. It's really powerful, isn't it?
It's a real standout scene. Yeah. It's very believable and emotional and kind of going from just anger straight to kind of resignation. And it's just fantastic.
Did you read what apparently what Sydney said about that sequence?
No.
Apparently, Paddy Chayefsky was there a lot of the time. The writer was there a lot of the time while Sydney directed and kind of gave a lot of guidance in doing the comedy. And apparently when he came to this scene, sort of Paddy started to make suggestions and Sydney was like, you know how to do the comedic, I know divorce. So and then went ahead and filmed that great scene. Didn't she won an Oscar for it.
She did, yeah. She won Best Supporting Actress. She was only in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's
the whole film. She's in it for 5 minutes.
It's the shortest performance to win an Oscar, I think. Yeah. Crazy.
I mean, it well deserves it. But I mean, who was she up against that year? I mean, it's like 5 minutes of acting.
Well, that's it. I quit.
Yeah. She's like turned up for a day and won an Oscar. I mean, that was a good day's work.
But the film is very prescient. I mean, that's the word you keep seeing in all the kind of reviews about the direction of the media.
Substitute UBS for Fox in this film and you're pretty much there.
Yeah, it does. It's, you know, a kind of out and out turning news into entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, there's a kind of the subplot in the film is this Liberation Army people, the Ecumenical Liberation Army. They've managed to obtain kind of film of them committing robberies and they do a covert deal with them saying, look, next time you commit a robbery, send us the tapes and we'll give you some money.
Yeah, and so the spokeswoman for the American Communist Party will basically introduce each one.
Yeah.
Each film, each episode. I think it's actually called the Mao Zedong Hour.
Yes. I mean, it's pretty funny in the film. I mean, that is the point where it kind of goes off into a bit more of a farce kind of direction.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's not that far away from what happens
well,
now.
Well, what the film got wrong was that it felt that the only way reality TV show would work is if you had, you know, you followed a radical terrorist group and had, you know, exciting real footage of robberies. Mm. When actually, for reality TV, you can just stick some people sitting around in their pants talking rubbish with each other, and that gets the ratings. They actually overestimated what they'd have to do to make reality interesting. The other kind of, as you say, like the sort of backroom machinations of the other sort of plot of the film is it about, you know, the company that's just taken over UBS trying to unload what it sees as the loss. Well, it is making a loss, the news section.
Yes,
the news
arm, by making it more, moving it across the entertainment division and trying to make it, jazz it up and make it more of a kind of comedy.
Yeah, a lot of the things, that kind of crazy show, was just picked up by the news. I mean, like, it don't know about you, but it frustrates you so much when BBC News starts reading out tweets from idiots. I don't care what the general public thinks about something it barely understands. I want, actually, the people who directly involved and have got jobs in that area to tell me what they think, because they are actually experts in it. Have you seen any of the Black Mirrors?
I haven't. I somehow seem to have missed both series.
Okay, well, there's only three in each series. It's easily done. But it reminded me a little bit of, or I should, I suppose, say Black Mirror reminds me a little bit of Network. Mm. I think there are lots of influences Network has had. As we said, Alan Partridge. Obviously, that's going to be influenced.
Jaka Naka Nori.
But also things like Brass Eye and Day to Day, you know, taking the media and holding it up to be ridiculous. Mm. You know, it's sort of had a big, it's cast a big shadow, I think, over everything that's come afterwards.
It's funny though, isn't it? It is weird. Like I said earlier, it's I had never heard of this film and then suddenly I see it everywhere.
Mm.
But I do think it's kind of lost some of its impact in the sense that it isn't as shocking as perhaps it was in the 70s.
No.
And I didn't realise it was meant to be a comedy until about halfway through.
Well, does that suggest just how desensitised we've become to to the ridiculousness of their media, we're like, oh yeah, that's pretty all right. Yeah,
that probably would happen.
That seems quite serious. They're actually taking that issue, they're talking about the issue in a much more in depth than the standard news program now.
There is a great bit towards the end where it's almost like the curtain is pulled back to reveal the wizard behind the scenes, or in this case, perhaps the devil, who's the head of the company.
It's played by Ned Beatty. Is it Ned Beatty?
Ned Beatty.
I mean, Ned Beatty's been in loads. He's a great kind of character actor, isn't he? He was in Deliverance. He's in all sorts of things.
I mean, he's fantastic. The speech is brilliant.
There is something about it, isn't there?
And the way it's shot, they're kind of in a darkened room and in this big conference room, and he just basically says, the world is business.
Yeah, people don't matter, corporations matter. Yeah. And we are eventually moving to a point where there is one single great corporation, everyone will be a shareholder, everyone will work for it. And then presumably one day there'll be a spaceship called Nostradamus, the Nostromo,
where
the company will run.
There's a direct line between Network and the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
But it's great because he comes, you know, he comes across as very like kind of a friendly, approachable boss. Mm. Basically, the scene in the film where is Howard is perhaps cutting a little bit too close to the bone with some of his barbs, and he's actually starting to attack the network he's on, and threaten some of their business. Mm. So the head of the head of the company takes him in. He sort of says something like, "Oh, I've been told I can sell anyone anything." And then he just does this really almost like, you're right, like a god slash devil. He closes all the curtains in the boardroom and just uses light and the power of his voice. And, it's unnerving.
Yeah, really great speech. In fact, one thing this this film is full of is great speeches.
Mm.
Or bad speeches, depending on your point of view. I mean, Pauline Kael, when she originally reviewed the film, just said it was preachy speeches. That's it. Mm. The whole film is just full of hot air. And just people shouting at each other, and there's not really any substance to it. I kind of disagree. I see where she's coming from. There are a lot of kind of long, kind of shouted speeches.
Yeah.
But a lot of them is really well written and really well acted. So, you know, that's fine. As long as what they're shouting is good stuff, then it's all right.
Yeah.
Every single character gets some sort of long kind of monologue to kind of...
To get their teeth into.
Ball into someone else's face. They're probably the highlight for me.
I think you're right. I mean, the one that didn't really work for me is when William Holden is kind of talking to Faye Dunaway.
Towards the end
of their kind of relationship, and they have a... He sort of tells her what he thinks of her and describes her. Well, that was just a little bit over the egg and the pudding slightly.
Yeah, I kind of see what you mean. Especially as I think probably I had more sympathy for Faye Dunaway's character than perhaps the film really wanted to have.
That's what I found as well. Maybe that's the kind of modern sensibility coming through. But
for me, I'm just kind of seeing it. Well, you're in a terribly chauvinistic, male-dominated world.
Yeah,
and you're trying to do the best you can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're ambitious, and your ambition perhaps is leading you to some slightly misguided places, but. Yeah, you're right. She's been paid to do a job, and she's just trying to do it.
And let's not forget that Max was the one who left his wife to be with her.
Yes.
And yet he's the one that's throwing recriminations in her.
Yeah, I thought that. She was turning her into the bad thing, almost like he has no control over it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you do. I've already mentioned Black Mirror and the way they kind of reminded me of each other. But one of the things that Black Mirror is often accused of is that it has interesting ideas, but in execution, the situations and the stories are unbelievable because it's more interesting than the ideas. And I thought the same about Network.
Mm.
Some of the actual plot twists I don't think would really happen. But they happened to illustrate, to show certain ideas and concepts.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, and that's what I always say when people have a go at Black Mirror, I'm like, well, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's believable.
Mm.
It's the ideas. It's trying to get you to think about certain ideas.
Mm.
And that's what Network is trying to do.
Definitely. And it certainly had me thinking about it for a long time after I finished watching it, you know.
Yeah.
Especially kind of, like we said, the bit towards the end, the great speech by Ned Beatty. But it is uneven. That's the thing.
Yeah,
that's
it
the
is.
Real
it's a little
difficult.
Yeah.
That's the difficulty I have with the film. It's like I said, you know, I didn't know if it realise it was a comedy until halfway through, and then there's just these kind of even bits of tone where it just goes all out fast and then reins it back with a bit of seriousness, and I'm like, where is this going? What is this film trying to be? It's trying to be too many things at once.
Yeah, it is. Overstuffed. Slightly overstuffed. But when it works really well. I think, as you said earlier, you can forgive it. Yeah. You can forgive it because it's well acted, it's well performed, it's interesting ideas, and it more or less stays on track.
Yeah.
The one thing I think it does so well is articulate that kind of disappointment, anger that Western countries seem to have.
Mm.
A kind of apathy mixed with anger.
Yeah.
It's a lethal cocktail. But it's interesting that it was there in the 70s, and it's just there nearly 40 years later.
Yeah.
That feeling of just like, God, this is just, I don't know how to solve it, but why is everything so rubbish? Why is everything so shit? Why can't it just be better?
Well, that's it. It's the enforced rage. They talk a lot about current affairs in the film, you know, the oil crisis, war, and various things.
Oh, it's a real comment on 70s America. It's not just attacking the media of 1970s America, is attacking everything about 1970s America. I'm as angry as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's why I work. And yeah, you do really understand why that's such a seductive message.
Yeah. So would you recommend the film?
Yeah, definitely. I think I perhaps would say it's very 1970s.
That's no bad thing, right?
That's no bad thing at all. But yeah, it's the only thing I would say is perhaps don't expect a massive laugh out loud comedy. It's got comedic moments, but as you say, it's a very serious film. But yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I'm sure I will watch it again someday.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it too. With a slight proviso, I think that, you know, it's not the greatest film of all time.
No.
It's got fantastic performances in it. If you look at the scenes individually, they're all very good, or most of them are. But as a film, it doesn't hold together quite as well as it should do. But still a good film.
Okay, great.
So, our secret sponsor for this week.
Oh, yeah, secret sponsor. Yes, it's Get Real.
That's R-E-E-L. See, it's a pun.
Very good.
Hey,
so you can follow Get Real on Twitter, on @GetReal.
Or have a look on their website at
dash real.net.
I had a quick look at there. They had a very interesting story about Spider-Man.
Over-egging the pudding.
Yes, the
too many eggs.
Too many eggs. There's too many eggs starring in the second.
Too many villains. Is that what it is?
Too many villains. Why do they put so many villains?
I have no idea, because it never works.
Spider-Man 3. There's 3 is too many villains.
There's just it's never worked.
Just have one villain.
Yeah.
That works.
Just don't understand the logic. I can't. When they have that meeting in Hollywood, why does no one say, just put the hand up and go, hang on. All the films with loads of villains, all the superhero films with loads of villains never actually work, do they? Why are we enforcing the writer to do this, you know, to put loads of villains in this script? Yeah. Oh, I don't know. The only thing I think of, it just sells toys.
Oh, God. Is it come to that? Jesus.
Oh, it came to that, Lewis, a long time ago. Don't fool yourself. It came to that, about first, in 1977, with the release of Star Wars.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Well, if you have any recommendations for us, please do send them to
oneandrawnfilmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page, 101 Films, or just tweet us at 101 Films.
And you can look at our blog at oneandrawnfilmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
In hindsight, what we should have had is, I always like to do this, just mention the things we could have done to make the podcast much more entertaining. Yeah, we could have talked about the future of podcasting. We could have done the whole thing as a mad spoof about how our desperate need for ratings means that Lewis is going to shoot himself live on our next podcast. For me in the William Holden role, kind of tolerating it just to get off with Faye Dunaway.
And Faye Dunaway's here tonight.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. I love that. This is it.
So, yeah. But that's...
I don't care what the public think either, Ian. I don't care what Bill Public thinks about the news.
Joe's six-pack and his...
yeah, with his opinions.
But
idiots.